Hi, I'm Fred Schonenberg, and thank you for joining me on the Venture Fuel podcast. At Venture Fuel, we help companies find new solutions by partnering with the best startups from around the world. On the show, you'll learn the secrets of business leaders who tap into startups and the founders driving extraordinary results. We'll consider new ideas, stretch our mindsets beyond the status quo, and in the process, discover how to leap the competition and fuel personal growth. Hello, everyone. Today's episode is all about sustainability and how startups and industry leaders together can drive meaningful impact to the planet and to their bottom lines. We start with a glimpse into how Starbucks, Patagonia, and Comcast are tackling everything from water management to circularity and plastic-free initiatives, before then diving into how Diageo is making paper spirits bottles and Adidas is helping us run on recycled materials. Then we dive deep with Ralph Lauren and NFW on the innovations that will be showcased at the upcoming Olympic Games. Please enjoy.
Thank you all for joining. We've got an unbelievable show today. I'm Fred Schonenberg. I'm the founder of Venture Fuel. We sit at the intersection of industry leaders and startups. And that's what our business model is kind of marrying the large corporates with the renegade startups that are out there to drive growth for both of them. And this month, for Earth Month, we started to look at sustainability and to see what startups were innovating in the space and which corporates were partnering with those startups to drive change. And I have to say, it was a little overwhelming when we first dove in. There's so much, it's such an overwhelming problem: climate change, the environment, sustainability, the circular economy. There's just so much to be done and so much to fix that as an individual, it can feel very overwhelming. And I was kind of reminded of a story my dad used to tell me in the 1960s, a group of veterans and fishermen actually volunteered to patrol the Hudson River to ward off polluters. People were dumping things in the Hudson. And this crew, basically renegade crew, decides that they're just going to police the river at night. And it got a lot of press and excitement. And all of a sudden, government started chipping in. Corporations started chipping in, and they're largely credited with turning around the Hudson River and making it clean. And it sort of, to me, illuminates this opportunity that the change agents usually are the entrepreneur, that person that takes something that is really near and dear to them, wants to make a difference, they go out and do it. But in today's world, it's actually the corporations that are then partnering with those startups to leverage their resources, their scale. And they're doing that for a multiple reason. One, consumers are demanding it, right? Consumers want to buy products from companies that they believe in, they believe are doing the right thing. And consumers are willing to pay a premium, or at least the cost, for more sustainable and environmentally friendly products. So we saw this at first as a very daunting problem, and then we're incredibly excited when we started to see how startups and corporations are coming together to solve some of these challenges. So before we get into our unbelievable speakers, what I'd like to do is just share a couple of examples that we came across or we've been a part of. And if anyone's been following us on LinkedIn, I kind of been starting off every post with this statement, which is the kind of change we need to create is only possible when we collaborate. And so we really believe this marriage of startup and corporate is a way to drive growth for both, but also help solve some of the environmental challenges that are there. So I'm going to go kind of fast and furious. You will see, and Vanessa in a moment will walk you through Philo, which is where this event is taking place. But you can ping us, set up a meeting with us. I'm happy to share this document with anyone that would like. So don't feel like you have to take a ton of notes, but I'm going to go kind of fast and furious here. So we'll start with Patagonia. One of the most alarming sort of environmental challenges that we came across during this past month was realizing the challenges of discarded fishing net, which make up almost half of this giant land mass, three times the size of Paris, that is floating in between California and Hawaii. All fishing net. 50% of it is fishing net. Patagonia partnered with a company called Burio, which is essentially helping to recycle that fishing net and turning it into the materials that are used in their hats. Similarly, Perrier actually announced a large program of the Next Packaging Movement. It's time to make the future sparkle. where they're actually investing in several different startups in this space, and one of which was called FlexiKeg. And basically what they're doing, they called it an eco collaboration. They're delivering water and other beverages in this innovative, reusable, flexible keg. And so the idea here is reducing plastic waste and carbon emission. Thinking about circularity, this is a really cool program that Burger King is piloting. There's several companies involved with Loop, which is part of TerraCycle. But the idea is that these are reusable fast food containers. If you think of just the mass of fast food containers that get used on a daily basis throughout this country, the idea that that could be recyclable in a clean way, in a way that was not intrusive to the consumer experience, is a really breakthrough idea. One of my favorites that I'll share with you is this program with Pulpex. It actually involves Diageo, Unilever, and Pepsi. I'll talk about the Diageo piece. It's essentially developing a first-of-its-kind, scalable, paper-based bottle. And so the idea here is instead of using plastic or glass and still maintaining food-safe standards and making sure that it's fully recyclable, this was a collaboration of those big companies coming together saying, we have a common problem. Let's put aside any competitive nature here and work together to drive change. Again, on circularity, H&M partnered with Repack. And the idea here is that when you're getting things shipped to you, we're all ordering on e-commerce, especially the past year and a half. You're having products shipped. Those containers that are coming to you, you know, from Amazon or whatnot, tend to get thrown in the recycling, and recycling is an imperfect world. So Repack was giving you an ability to send that back, reuse that packaging. There's actually a couple startups in that space that are really interesting. One of the more famous examples is Adidas, and Parley for the Oceans. Again, kind of thinking of plastics, what's out there and how you can upcycle it and reuse it in unique ways. They essentially have turned threat into thread, and they're using recycled plastic bottles to make shoes. And they're actually announcing a new shoe in the next couple of weeks around this as well. So again, taking a challenge and actually turning it into a benefit and a product for people. Another example of people coming together, the Accelerator 100 Plus. This was started by AB InBev, one of our clients and favorite corporates to work with. And they started it a couple of years ago, 2018. And they were looking at, you know, sustainable supply chain. And what they realized was that Colgate, Coca-Cola, and Unilever all had similar problems. And by bringing everybody together, you start to really scale what those solutions are. So they just announced that this week, that they brought these other corporates involved. And there's a host of companies that have come out of that historically. And they're in the process of doing their latest cohort. Sticking with the fishing net challenge, this is pretty interesting. DSM actually collaborated to make these watches where they're made from that plastic fishing net. So again, diving watches, sport active, people that really care about the water. Now the products that they're buying are not made with new materials, but rather the problem materials that they're so passionate about. Food waste is obviously a huge issue. We're kind of touching on a bunch of different things here. IKEA has done a pretty powerful partnership with Winnow. Winnow is like an AI vision software. So it actually sits on top of the trash in commercial kitchens. And essentially, as you dispose trash, it's taking instant photos. It has a weight sensor on the bottom. So it starts to learn exactly what you're throwing away and when. And you can see the numbers here that reduce food waste by 75%. So IKEA now is rolling that out across most, if not all, of their commercial kitchens. And Winnow is taking that, obviously, to all different types of commercial applications. But again, using AI and computer vision, solve a very specific problem that then scales pretty interestingly. Appeal is super interesting. Essentially, they're using plant-derived shelf extension technology. That all sounds really fancy, right? But they're actually using fruits and vegetables and what's in those to put it outside of fruits and vegetables to keep them alive longer, right? So instead of good food going bad, it stays fresh as much as 2 times longer, which of course means less needed to be produced and longer times, which is good for everybody involved on the retail side of things. And Nature's Pride is a large food distributor throughout Europe, and they've partnered with them with avocados, I believe apples, and cucumbers as well. So like the plastic on the cucumber is no longer needed. A few more here. Pepsi has partnered with CCM Technologies. This is out of their Europe group, and looking at potato chips. Walkers is a big brand there. And could they actually turn the discarded pieces of the potato into low carbon fertilizer? And that was able to reduce the carbon footprint of those potatoes that they use by 70%. Levi's is using something called RenewCell, which is making sure your next pair of Levi's will actually be someone else's old pair of Levi's. They're recycling the Levi's that are made, which is actually an incredibly complicated process, and also ensuring that the next round of Levi's are all 100% recyclable. And that is through something called Circulose. We played a pretty heavy hand in this next one, which is water conservation. It's a company called Conservation Labs. We worked with Comcast, their Comcast Lift Labs team, which helps find startup solutions to enterprise challenges that they have. And one of which was water and sustainability, right? What happens if there's a leak in one of the buildings? How do you make sure that all of your buildings, I think they have 30,000 buildings or some unbelievable number in the US alone, how do they make sure that there aren't leaks? They're not wasting water, both for the bottom line as well as for the environment. And Conservation Labs actually is just a super simple product that sits on top of pipes. You don't have to do anything sort of intrusive to the building. And they're in the middle of a pilot with that. And the last one I'll share with you, Starbucks. This is pretty cool, very similar to the Burger King example earlier, but again, with circularity, the idea of could we all, with our Starbucks, use a reusable cup? There's a whole bunch of reasons why we don't do that, right? It's kind of inconvenient. Is it going to be clean? How do we pick it up? How do we drop it off? They partnered with a company called Ridwell, which either use one of these contactless kiosks where you just scan it, drop your cup in, you get your sort of refund as well as your rewards points, or you can, they'll pick it up at your home through the Ridwell partnership. So again, trying to take the friction out of the process, but think of how many Starbucks cups are out there and what the potential for this is. So that was fast and furious, a whole bunch of things. Again, just want to reiterate, we really believe this partnership of startup and corporate is the secret for a lot of business challenges and growth challenges, but specifically when it comes to environmental. I think there's a lot here where even if sustainability piece is not core currently to your corporate challenges, it's something that you can make a big impact on and can help with your bottom line as well. And that's what Venture Fuel does. We've been around since 2014, and we are focused on external innovation, helping startups and corporates work together because it's a faster timeline, get products to market, it's lower risks, and you're closer to the consumer. And we've gotten to work with lots of great people. So as pitch today, I'm really excited to turn this over to Vanessa Rosato, who is our head of growth, who can take you through the agenda today.
Thanks, Fred. We're really excited to have two guests who are at the forefront of this space, the intersection and collaboration between industry leaders and startups that are creating innovations in sustainability. Our first guest is Jason Burns, SVP of Product and Manufacturing Innovation at the Ralph Lauren Corporation. He's accompanied today by Steve Zika, the president of Natural Fiber Welding. Thank you both for taking the time to be here today.
Glad to be here, Vanessa. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's jump right in. First, I'd like to ask Steve, can you introduce us to Natural Fiber Welding, who you guys are, what you do, and why your mission matters to the materials industry?
Yeah, thank you. I'd be happy to. So yeah, here at Natural Fiber Welding, we're a company that, I guess we're still a startup company, but we're rapidly trying to transition into a company that's, you know, just a company. We're based in Peoria, Illinois, and we're inspired by the plants that we see in nature every single day. We're inspired by their incredible high performance, their abundance, their inherent circularity. Nature makes circular materials all day, every day, and using those plants and other natural materials to displace plastics. We look around the world and we see that with this abundant high performance material feedstock, if we could solve the problem of reformatting and reshaping those materials into the form factors that we need for our clothes or for our shoes or for our, you know, soft goods in our homes, that nature gives us the materials we need. And we just need to look at new ways of formatting and shaping and molding those materials. So that's the approach that NFW takes of plants, not plastic. We think it's really important to keep natural materials fully natural. And so we never combine any synthetic plastics or any synthetic materials of any sort with our natural materials. That is key to keeping them circular. And we're coming to market this year with two different sort of platform approaches for that same idea. One of them is a textile approach, a process that we use on cotton or other cellulosic materials that allows us to increase the performance of yarns and therefore fabrics that are made out of cotton or, again, out of other cellulosics. And importantly, and you know, related to what Fred was mentioning about recycling of cotton, so we can improve the performance of cotton in a way that makes virgin cotton extremely high performance, but also makes recycled cotton, you know, as high or higher performance than what we're used to expect from virgin cotton. That technology we call Claris. And the second technology that we're bringing to market, we call Mirum. This is a 100% natural plant substitute for leather, or for synthetic leather, I guess, right? It's important to note that today there's more synthetic plastic-derived leather in the world than there is actual leather from cowhides. And so, again, we're looking at opportunities to use plants to provide the functionality that people would like to have in a shoe or in a handbag or in the future in an automotive interior, and yet do it from something that's fully circular and plant-based. That's an overview of NFW.
And that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. One of the things that impressed me most about NFW as I did, you know, research and learned more about the company was the fact that you are committed to not asking consumers to sacrifice quality in order to make this change, in order to go towards more sustainable materials. And I just want to, I mean, that's going to take me into my next question, which is for Jason, because you look at an iconic global leader in apparel and in, you know, lifestyle brand, the Ralph Lauren Corporation. How did you learn about natural fiber welding, and why were you interested in exploring more sustainable materials with them, specifically as a partner?
So we got a cold call. NFW was working with somebody who was connected in the fashion industry, a gentleman named David Greiner. And he picked up the phone and he called someone on my team and said, "Hey, I'm representing this company out in Peoria. You know, we're doing great stuff with cotton upcycling and performance. We'd love to, have them speak to you." And we said, "Sounds really cool. Of course, we'd love to have that conversation." You know, we pride ourselves on taking every call we get, right, within our space, right? It's crucial. It's how you can find things by looking and by scouting, but it's also important when people reach out to take the time to have that conversation. So, and we went out and, you know, we saw the company and they were operating out of this sort of two buildings, and you know, they sort of, one of them was kind of rotting, and you know, but you go into the other one and there's this amazing piece of equipment that they had built in about 4 months with off the shelf components. And my colleague and I looked at each other and went, "Wow, this is going places." That was the start.
That's awesome. Jason, you in particular, you have your responsibility at the Ralph Lauren Corporation includes open innovation. You have a history in the apparel industry across various brands in bringing innovative processes, innovative technologies, innovative team structures. But this is a question for both of you. It's often not a natural collaboration for an industry-leading large global organization to work with an organization that is just at the start. I know, Steve, you said, you know, you don't want to be a startup anymore. You guys are beginning to scale. But what challenges did you find to collaboration, and how did you overcome them?
Even before we're ready to start collaborating with, you know, with a company like Ralph Lauren or a startup, funding is, of course, a huge challenge. You know, Ralph Lauren has been a great partner and has not expected us to have production ready at scale, at cost materials. And they understood that from the start. And yet getting to the scale and to the cost points of the prototypes that are, you know, where they could accept them and receive them is something that takes quite a bit of resources. And so, you know, from the beginning, it's been a challenge to continue to bring in resources and bring in funding to get even to the point where we could, you know, even approximate a handoff that Jason and his team and the whole supply chain team at Ralph Lauren, you know, could work with. And I'll say that, you know, the partnership that what Ralph Lauren and our partnership today represents is collaboration and, you know, solving these problems. But, you know, it's critical to note that, you know, in the summer of last year, Ralph Lauren also stepped up and was a key participant in leading, you know, our Series A round. And so we'll talk, and Jason and I both have, you know, similar ideas about some of the challenges for the collaboration to be successful in moving forward. But even the participation financially was also a huge contributor, because just getting the resources to get the technology, like I said, to where Jason's team and the supply chain team can accept it, it is a challenge, I think, for every startup. So maybe Jason can comment on some of the other challenges they've seen, and we can have a conversation about this one.
Yeah, I think you alluded to it, Steve, but you know, that gap to scale is a big, big, big challenge, right? I mean, you know, Ralph Lauren Corporation makes almost 200 million units a year, 80 to 82% of that is cotton. You know, and so we, you know, when we look at a company like NFW, right, there's just no, you know, immediately out of the gate, you know, there's no way to sort of bridge that gap, right? And so we have to put in place thinking, right, and set expectations in the right way. You know, and every startup has this problem, right? They need to figure out how to scale. Ralph Lauren Corporation we're not the government. We don't fund research generally, right? We're looking to get product to market. And so sort of, you know, figuring out the give and take to get there is crucial. And part of it too is, you know, helping to get startups like NFW the right funding. I've talked to a lot of potential investors for NFW and for other startups, you know, to explain why solutions are interesting to large corporations in the sustainability space. You know, and I think there are a lot of different pathways. You know, we're not, you know, normally an investing type company. We don't, this was one of our first, this was our first ever investment in a startup of this type. We really believed in it and felt like it would help to accelerate something that would be fundamentally, you know, a game changer for our business, right? And, and you know, that became quite clear. But again, you have that, you know, we have certain expectations when we're bringing something to market, and NFW has a relatively small team, and they're learning and we're learning, you know, and the rest of our value chain is learning together. So, you know, you have things that happen, not everything's smooth. And I think knowing that out of the gate, that you're going to have these sort of starts and stops and you're going to hit speed bumps and potholes is crucial, right? And being able to talk through it transparently and really, you know, have that clarity of relationship and communication. You know, I think Steve, you know, I think, you know, we had, you know, even when we were doing SOWs before we made those, you know, a strategic investment, there was a lot of give and take on this, right?
I mean, I think, any partnership has to benefit both sides and has to have a compromise on both sides. And I think, you know, our partnership's been successful so far because of that. I'd say another challenge that it's also worth noting is that, you know, NFW doesn't just provide a finished product for Ralph Lauren Corporation, right? We're in the textile and apparel industry. We're in a very complex supply chain. And so we have a piece of technology, which, you know, which we believe and Jason and his team believe is going to be very disruptive for the industry, but we can't, even with that, we don't provide him a finished product. We provide a piece of technology that gets done on a yarn that's spun by a spinning partner that gets provided to a knitting partner that goes through fabric finishing, that goes through garment production and testing. And so, you know, the collaboration to bring products to market with Ralph Lauren is not simply between NFW and Ralph Lauren. It's between, right, you know, a handful of other supply chain partners. And so bringing all of those partners together who are, you know, maybe they're loyal in supporting the Ralph Lauren supply chain, but just like Ralph Lauren's not used to working with a startup, so maybe the textile mill is working with a startup maybe for one of the first times. And so I think that creates additional challenges and creates, you know, pressure on a company like NFW not to remain where we are in producing, you know, the product that we're really good at producing, but extending our own team's, you know, ability to go further upstream, to go, you know, to go further in reaching our hand out to where Ralph Lauren needs us to be, to where the textile mills need us to be, bringing a lot of that expertise, you know, in-house. We started as a team of material scientists and chemists and engineers, but, you know, we've needed to bring fabric expertise and apparel expertise and, you know, additional industry knowledge to be able to be more relevant to getting not just Jason what he needs, but, you know, his supply chain partners what they need as well. So I think it's been another challenge and learning experience for us to be able to support partners like Ralph Lauren.
It sounds like it's a genuine collaboration. And Steve, you said that it's something that has to be beneficial to both of the organizations in order to make it work. I want to get back to another question about structure, which is something that came up in the prep that we did for today. But just because we're here, you know, a question for Jason, how did you make the business case? And to Steve's point, not just internally to senior leadership, because this is a long-term investment, but also to your partners, to your other suppliers that would be required now to work with NFW. And even, you know, when you think about Ralph Lauren as a global iconic brand, how do you make the business case or the rationalization for the end benefit to the consumer?
So great questions there. You know, I think, you know, from a sustainability perspective, you know, we had started talking to NFW based on the signals that we were seeing out in the world, right? The trend lines around sustainability have been clear for a while. And we actually met the company, right? Our own company, Ralph Lauren, where they were at the perfect time, right? So we have really committed to sustainability goals, right? We have a very aggressive target set on water, energy, carbon, emissions, right? And so, you know, we really are doubling down in this space. So, you know, we had actually started talking to NFW before we started working on those strategies. And it took that long to sort of come together and make it work. But by the time we were really ready to have a conversation about investment and scaling, the company was right there, right? And so making that case actually was pretty simple. It was, hey, we have a great technology partner, right, that we can launch something that's new to the world with, that has multiple technology pathways, right? So the Mirum and the Claris that we think can scale, right? And that can really change our business potentially, because cotton products, cotton garments are really hard to recycle, right? Yeah. There was a technology that was shown earlier. You have to destroy the cotton in that technology to turn it into basically a synthetic cotton. You know, our NFW has the potential to take ground up cotton, keep it cotton, and then improve its performance. And that's really exciting, right? And that actually takes you to the consumer piece. Our consumers, right? We actually are steering away from the word consumer more and more, right? More like end customers, right? Because as business models are changing, right? People aren't consuming. They might be renting, right? There might be other value models. But, you know, that end customer, right, is demanding more and more sustainability, right? And then they also really want performance. And, you know, the ability of NFW and cotton to provide both, really the same in Mirum, right? So sustainability and performance, that's really impactful. And it meets that end customer exactly where they are. That's what they're asking for, right? So they're really excited. You know, the consumer testing that we've done here has been super encouraging. People are really, really stoked. And then when you talk about partners, you know, our partners, you know, from a manufacturing perspective, they're open, right? I mean, they're willing to do, you know, what we want to do and work with us. You know, there's always trepidation, right, when there's something new in the materials world for a manufacturer, for a textile mill. And so, you know, there's certainly some encouragement that's necessary there to make it work. And again, stops and starts. But we're closely partnered with our manufacturers and they're willing to take the journey with us and with NFW.
Thank you for that. I want to go back to the question on structure, because it was actually something that struck me when we were preparing. We look at a lot of large-scale organizations, and they have very robust innovation teams, innovation structures. You could even call them innovation organizations within the broader organization. And it was something that you both specifically called out, Jason, how your approach to structuring the team in a way to make this successful. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can. And I think Steve has some things to add there as well. But we're a really small team in a really big organization. You know, and part of that is purposeful. Right. So, you know, we need to be really as collaborative as possible with everybody else in the organization to succeed. Right. And so we have, you know, very close relationships with, you know, groups across the organization. We also are set up not just to be an ideas team, but to be an executional team. And that's important, right? That we have people on the team with the expertise to do. So throughout my career, I've seen innovation groups come and go. And in an organization like mine that's not a heavy sort of science or R&D organization, you know, you really need to carry the water pretty heavily, right? So, you know, that sort of ability to dig deep, get into the details and make these things happen is absolutely crucial for us to succeed. You know, we can't go, hey, you know, business teams, meet NFW, have fun, hope it all works out. Right. It just won't work. Right. And so, you know, we do a tremendous amount of front end work. We act as intermediaries. We push, we, you know, try to excite, right, within the organization. And then, you know, try to make sure that all of the pieces are coming together, you know. And, you know, I mean, people on my team, myself, end up in mills and in factories, rolling up sleeves and getting things done a lot of the time. That's really, really important. You know, and because we're small, you know, if we were self-sufficient, I think it would be easier to be disconnected from our business. And that also has its challenges. So, you know, I think that's really, you know, how we've structured. And then again, focused on, you know, great partnerships, right? Whether if it's with huge companies or small startups and researchers, you know, just being super open and then trying to build the right ecosystems of partnership, you know, bringing the right people together and having the right conversations. And then one last point is, you know, we also have the ability to, you know, take these ideas to the most senior people in the company and surface them, right? And that's really important too, because, you know, a lot of the times your C-suite sees the world differently, right? Than someone, you know, who's responsible for a piece of a P&L somewhere deep in the organization. They have a different vision, right? And I think that that's also really, really important. You need people at all levels of the organization to be engaged in this stuff to be successful.
I agree with what Jason said. And from our perspective, you know, his team is very effective at this. You know, it kind of ties back to this notion of bridging the gap that we talked about a moment ago, because, you know, in some cases, a company like NFW might engage with a large company directly with the product team, you know, and the product sourcing team will simply expect to order, you know, 100,000 yards of a finished fabric that's just ready to go, and NFW can't get there. And yet, you know, on the flip side, if you strictly engage with an innovation team that doesn't have buy-in from their product groups, you can get caught in a cycle of innovating and developing and researching for a really long time, but not get to market. And so I think that what Jason has built and what Ralph Lauren has built is a function where it understands, you know, where we are and understands where we need to get to and has the buy-in and the partnership from the product groups. For us, it's really key to have, you know, someone who can reach their arm back to where we are, but also have, you know, the direct connection to the product group such that there's a receiver to commercialize and go to market. NFW from the start is not interested in, you know, science fair projects or demonstrations that can't get to scale. We only want to work with, you know, with partners who have intention of going to scale with us. And that, you know, that's everything to us. I'll just add on, you know, on a comment from earlier, it's the consumer, the end customer, the end user of the product certainly does want sustainability and doesn't really want to sacrifice on performance. Truth is, they don't want to sacrifice on cost either. So it's hard to hit, you know, exact industry cost points when you're a small company and haven't reached scale. But it's important to us to develop processes that at scale will be cost competitive. And so, you know, for example, on the Mirum technology, you know, when we talk with partners today, we're offering them pricing that is exactly what they're accustomed to pay for leather today. You can't enter these markets with prices that are, you know, that are significantly higher. And so anyway, that is our strategy, to develop technologies and products that can be cost competitive without compromise on sustainability or performance. And structurally, Ralph Lauren has built the right, I think, balance between accessibility to the product groups and the supply chain and sourcing teams, with understanding that, you know, we're not ready to ship, you know, 100,000 yards of finished fabric at exactly the standard price point.
You know, I would build on that too and say, you know, if I look at where you are with Clarus, where we are, where we're going with it, it is still a little bit more expensive, but we're able to position the storytelling around the product, right, to allow it to be there for a little while. And I think that that's all, you know, if you can create a differentiated product that has a great story, people will pay you for it, right? And, you know, it doesn't always have to be, you know, a this for that, like traditional cotton for Clarus. If we have, you know, a great story to tell and great attributes that matter to the consumer, there's runway there. You know, businesses have been built with solutions like that. And I think it's, you know, it's important to acknowledge that as well. You know, if it's just a simple plug out, yeah, then you have to be exactly there on cost. If it's not, it can be a little bit different.
It's interesting too to see, just, you know, on the surface as an outsider, some of the uses and applications of the materials and your use of Mirum now in the Team USA's Olympic uniforms and really putting it on that global stage and elevating it and making it, you know, it's not just accessible, it's almost like a little bit aspirational as you're, you know, bringing in these new materials. It's really interesting. I just want to take a minute to move us to some questions that are coming from the folks that are watching today on Philo. The first question is, what does the process look like when deciding to partner with a startup? What's your vetting, scoping, and execution? I think this would be a question for Jason, but also, Steve, interesting to hear your perspective from the other side as they're going through this process.
You know, it's a lot like dating, right? So you meet, right? You sort of feel each other out, right? Do I like you? Do you like me? What's the thing that you're pitching? Do we believe in it? You know, do we like your kitchen? You know, it's really, I use that analogy because it's sort of true. You know, you're feeling each other out at the beginning and then you sort of go deeper and deeper on the what's sort of really there, right? So, you know, of course we vet the technology, you know, we look for strategic alignment, right? So we have a whole matrix, right, of programs and projects, right? We actually go through a sort of a waterfall, right, of idea to in market where we triage things, right? And along the way, we're applying different valuation metrics, right? Looking at, okay, here are our corporate goals and objectives. How do these things line up with them and how many boxes can we tick there, right? And so it's really crucial that we're aligned to where the company is going. And that's a big part of when we look at a startup, does it match? Does it fit? Can we align it with our strategy? And that takes a lot of them out, right? Yeah. Especially in my area where, you know, I say no a lot to AI startups. Why? I'm just not in that space, right? That's not my focus. And so that focus becomes crucial as well. And then, you know, there was a question in there, I think, about execution. So yeah, that mm-hmm. has to be, that's a crucial part of it. But the levels of executional necessity are different at each one of those milestones, right? So, you know, getting to proof of concept is oh so different from getting product into market. And we just have to recognize that and make sure that, you know, our partners are clear on that as well, right? Making one and making 500,000, not the same thing.
It is interesting to see. I mean, we talk about this concept of innovation tourism, where it's like bring in the startups, show the technology, but not necessarily with an intention to scale. You know, it appears that your intention is to scale. I mean, you're invested, you're active, you're engaged. How do you compare the two from exploration to the practice of, you know, commercialization?
We do both. I mean, the tourism is necessary, right? Okay. To figure out where you want to live, right? Yeah. You know, if you're going to go find the best place to live, it's nice to visit it first. And so, you know, we meet and talk to a huge number of startups and other companies from mid-sized enterprise to large global enterprises, right? And, you know, probably, I would say at least 95% of the groups we talk to, we never do anything with, right? And it's just, you know, there's not a match. We don't believe in the technology. We don't think it can scale, right? It just doesn't meet our rubric of the what and sometimes the why. And then we also have to, you know, believe in the team too, right? Who, you know, just like a venture capital or private equity group, you know, if the management team doesn't seem like they can pull it off, we're not going to do anything, you know, and we need, you know, just like, you know, if you look at us as an investor, right, even though we're not a traditional investor, right, is the management team selling something that's real or is it vaporware, right? You know, and you know, you see a lot of that too, which is, hey, that sounds really, really cool, but you have no path to scale on that, right? And that matters.
The next question I have from the audience is, do you believe that mycelium will be the new substitute for leather for the future sustainability for apparel, footwear and bags, et cetera? Versus having that perception for consumers of true leather.
Steve, you have a conflict of interest, so can I take this one first?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
So I think it will be a substitute, right? So Mirum isn't, and Steve will speak to this, right? But there's a lot of room in this space, right? And I think there are a lot of emergent technologies. There are some that are going to do well and some that won't. Scale and speed matter. And with that, I'm going to pass it over to Steve.
Well, I agree. It is a massive market and there's different segments of the market and there's different technologies that'll be best suited for different segments of the market. NFW's Mirum is not mycelium. Mirum comes from plants. Mirum comes from a unique way of combining all of the diversity of different plant materials that are available to us and the unique and diverse properties that different plant materials bring us. So for example, a cork is a very different material than hemp is a very different material than natural rubber is a very different material. And so when we combine all of these different materials together, we can tailor the properties that are needed for a given application, like a handbag or a shoe or, you know, upholstery or automotive interiors, et cetera. Everything that we do is centered on making sure that Mirum has the performance that's needed for the application and we can tune recipes to get exactly what the performance is. We think that it's really important that it stays plastic free, right? There is no plastic, there is no synthetic in Mirum, which means that it is safe to return back to the environment. Mirum is also recyclable, which is, I think, unique amongst, you know, this category of emergent technologies to displace leather. So it has to be sustainable, it has to be high performance, and it has to be produced, you know, at cost points that are relevant to the mass markets, right? If you, there may be small sort of luxury players that are able to pay a very high premium. I mean, the premium for materials has always existed and will continue to exist. But large scalable technologies, we believe, need to play at price points that are, you know, what our customers are accustomed to paying. I mean, Jason's right. Like, we'll go ahead and take a premium for a premium material and a premium sustainability story and premium performance. But that doesn't mean that we should expect our customer to pay a price that doesn't fit into their business cost structure in order to really get to scale. Our aspirations at NFW are not to be, you know, I think Jason could say the same thing from Ralph Lauren. Our aspiration with Ralph Lauren or any of our partners is not to be in 1% of their product line in the future, where it's like, oh, this extra special thing that almost nobody, you know, actually buys, but we have it. Our aspiration is to be as deep into their company as it makes sense for them, which is to say, you know, very deeply throughout the product lines of what Ralph Lauren offers. And that's true for Clarus and Mirum. That's true for everything that we're doing.
It's interesting because the research, we were talking a little bit before we went live, and Fred was talking about how I've just been talking about NFW like nonstop since we learned about it, because as a consumer, an average consumer not in this industry, you don't necessarily think, or I didn't necessarily think about the fabric of the clothing that I was wearing as being a contributor to this issue. But you guys have a tremendous mission, trademark the phrase plant, not plastic. Your vision is, I guess, just to reinforce what you said, not to necessarily just have one corner of that market, but to really bring sustainable materials throughout the market. I guess, Steve, one question for you. This is coming from the audience, and to build upon that and the mission of NFW, you've mentioned cotton and leather alternatives. What other alternative materials are interesting to you from an impact perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I could say that we have this approach to use the diversity and the abundance of nature to displace, let's say, our soft goods, right? So something that NFW is not focused on doing is, you know, the Starbucks cup that Fred talked about. I mean, it is possible to make cups like that out of natural materials, out of plants, not plastic. It is possible, but it's not our area of focus. We're looking at soft goods. You know, you could think about a shoe as an example of a very interesting segment for us where, you know, there are a number of different plastics. Many of the shoes that we wear might have, Jason knows the footwear industry really well, 5 or 6 or even more different plastics in that shoe. One of them might be a polyurethane upper material that maybe Mirum is suitable to displace, but a different plastic material might be a foam. A different material, well, which isn't plastic, but is also synthetic, is, you know, traditionally cured rubber, you know, for the sole of the shoe. And we believe that these types of materials, you know, molded rubber pieces, foam type pieces, we can make rigid pieces for the soft goods industry, can be made strictly from plants, in a way that keeps them natural, that keeps them safe to return to the environment, that because of our technology allows them to be recyclable. And so that would be an example of a couple other types of materials that we're working on. It's really important for a small company like NFW to stay focused on what's going to market and what is, you know, prototyped and what, you know, will be going to market in the future. And Jason's right, there's a huge difference between prototypes and commercialization. But there's a lot of interesting materials that we're looking at and that, you know, that we think that this plants not plastic approach can really disrupt. And I guess, you know, last thought about it is we're engaging with customers like Ralph Lauren to think at the product level where the entire article, if it's natural, becomes recyclable in a different way than if, you know, the article is partly something natural, but partly something synthetic, and thinking about a component roadmap or a materials component roadmap that is informed by the requirements of the entire product, like what might be needed for a bag, what might be needed for a shoe in order to be fully natural.
Yeah, and you find plastics everywhere. So synthetic polymer, I mean, the longer you look at a product, the more you find, right? And so that's one of the interesting things about the NFW roadmap is that capability to sort of replace all of it, right? And that was one of the things that made them really interesting from an investor perspective is, you know, I could theoretically take the plastic out of everything, right? And that's really, really exciting.
That feeds into another question coming from the audience of what else is on Ralph Lauren's roadmap for both innovation and sustainability that you can talk about?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, there are things I can say and things I can't say. We had launched a few weeks ago a platform called Color on Demand that's all about dyeing our product more efficiently. And we have a great ecosystem of partners there, from multinationals like Dow to smaller startups like Genealogia in Spain. And, you know, we really are trying to address our value chain, right, in a more sustainable way. So anything you can think of, right, that is, you know, a challenge today. I mean, I like to use the example of Stretch, right, Elastane's. You know, there's really no Elastane solution today. So stretchy fibers, right, that is easily recyclable, separable from the base fiber, from the base fabrics, and that can sort of be eaten by a bacteria and returned to the biosphere, right? It's fully not biocompatible. And so, you know, looking for those solutions is important. You know, things like, you know, nearshoring and reshoring are really interesting, localized manufacturing, automation. You know, I mean, there are so many great things to address out there that it's tough to sort of capture them all. But I think, you know, big picture, you know, things like traceability, authenticity, the new markets emerging about resale and rental, you know, and then how we make our goods, all are very, very interesting sort of platforms on which to innovate and iterate.
There's a question about the Mirum Olympic patch. How long did it take for the Team USA sustainable badges to be produced and launched?
Great question. And I'm not sure I have an exact answer. That's a little bit lost to the haze of time at this point, because, you know, keep in mind, we were ready for this a year ago, right? The Olympics were delayed a year, right? So, you know, that would have put us at about, I want to say sub year, really, from, we should do back patches, right? Here's a target for this technology. Let's do something. Is that about right, Steve? Do I have that?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you know, the Mirum platform sort of had to exist first, but when we actually started discussing the idea of the back patch and then customizing to get the right color, to get the right texture, to get the, you know, the exact right materials, I think it was on the order of 6 months. I was going to answer the question by saying, you know, unfortunately, a year longer than it needed to, because it is true that the patches were ready and actually delivered for 2020 Olympics.
I had to check my notes because I was writing some things, you know, to share with folks about this week, and it kept saying 2020 Olympics. And I was like, wait a minute, 2021? What? Oh yeah, we lost a year. So sorry, Steve, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's right.
And the question for Jason, what kind of future gap do you most want a startup to emerge to solve?
So I'm really obsessed with the entire cotton value chain. Right. So there are a few here that I'm really interested in. Right. So one is, this isn't specific to cotton, by the way, but color in fiber is a real problem. So most of the recycling that's not chemically destroying fibers today has to keep the color that's in the fiber. And so a lot of it has to do with sorting. Removing of color molecules from fiber without destroying the fiber is a huge unlock. Right. So I'm really obsessed with that, because if I put, you know, the natural fiber welding technology into the mix, right, and I have, let's say, product that can no longer be used, right, I'd love to be able to take cotton, right, and put it right into that natural fiber welding system, upcycle it, make a great new product, really, and really unlock circularity with cotton. There's a lot of cotton product out there that could be recycled. Honestly, the same goes for synthetic fibers, right, where, you know, today, you know, one of the reasons you see all this stuff made out of, you know, formerly plastic bottles, those plastic bottles don't have a color, right? And it makes it really easy to recycle them comparatively, right? Where something that's been colored, boy, unless you're going to depolymerize it, right, or something else, it's really hard. So reversible dyeing solutions are actually one of the things I haven't seen a lot of out there that I'd love to see. And then, you know, real good scalable traceability solutions for fibers are another one. And it's a really big challenge, right? It's not as simple as, hey, I've got a blockchain, you know, because you might have a, you know, a small holder who's growing cotton. How do you tag that fiber, right? And follow it through the value chain. So there's, you know, there are a lot of things to solve for. And then lastly, no one's ever figured out how to automate apparel manufacturing in a really scalable way. You know, it's one of the last holdouts of industrial production. It really needs somebody's hands on two pieces of fabric and a sewing machine. you know, because fabrics are really difficult for robots to handle. And so that's another one. You know, people have, you know, been trying for decades. And there's some folks that are getting kind of close now, but that's one where I'd love to see something that really breaks through.
Thank you for that. We've got about 5 minutes left, so I want to close with a question for both of you. What advice do you have for folks that are watching today or who will engage with this content in the universe for, you know, how to make these kind of collaborations happen? Jason, whether they're at an industry leader and they're trying to bring in startups or trying to bring in more disruptive innovation, or Steve, for you, whether they are startups that are trying to find organizations that are going to collaborate with them and help them scale their business model and their technology. Steve, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I could. And I think it's, you know, it's a little bit related to the question before about, you know, what process does the Ralph Lauren team and does Jason and his team use? You know, I would say from our perspective, two things. One is we also have a system that's similar to what Jason described of thinking about the alignment of values, thinking about the alignment of mission, thinking about, is it a company that is interested in getting to scale, that has the same sustainability goals that they've publicly stated that are aligned with what we think we can do, a company that's aligned with helping us tell our brand story and tell our story as opposed to, you know, sort of burying it. So there's a whole list of questions that we look at to make sure that we're aligned with our partner. And then I guess the other thing that's maybe not a deep insight, but is just a truth, is that we often think about the fact that we're engaging with a company, which is true, but we're also really engaging with people, right? Like people are who you actually, you know, very rarely do I call Ralph Lauren Corporation. I call Jason Burns, or I call Deborah, or I call Richard, or I call the people. And so I think the advice is find people that you like to work with, find people that, you know, because maybe in part because they work for a corporation that tells them what the values should be. But when you find the right people and the right team that share the values and share the mission and want to work together with you, makes it a lot easier and a lot more fun. So, you know, we find this all the time. We work with people who happen to work for corporations that have missions and goals, but that's what gets stuff done.
Love that.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah. I have one word to add, and that word is courage. You know, I think that, you know, bringing newness into the world, into a large organization, takes courage, right? Because, you know, there will always be difficulties and roadblocks and people who don't believe and see the vision immediately, right? And that sort of, that courage and stick-to-itiveness is absolutely crucial to succeed.
Thanks so much for joining us. Our next event is May 27th from 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern. We are going to focus on data innovation, how brands like Mondelez and Instacart are partnering with startups to discover new growth. Please go to VentureFuel on LinkedIn to find out more. Until next time.